From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 5th day of April 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. In agricultural news, the U.S. is in need of more young farmers and ranchers. CRP enrollment has been extended by 1 week, and the National Wildlife Federation thinks the U.S. biomass industry needs to be careful when deploying new energy crops. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. And also in this half hour, I'll tell you why it's not good enough for a herbicide premix plan to tout multiple modes of action, and that those modes must also be effective. And at the end of the half hour, we'll talk about the agricultural weather forecast with meteorologist Peter Levitt on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
On this Thursday afternoon, the last trading day of the week, as the markets will be closed in for Good Friday tomorrow. May futures in the wheat pit at 638.5 are down 3/4 today. July at 646.25, down 3.5. And the hard red in Kansas City at 814.5, down 4.5. Corn pit was higher. May futures 658.25, up 1.5. July at 652, a penny and a half higher. And the September at 569.25. Up 4.5 cents. December futures at $5.50, up 6. And the March contract, 5.61, up 6.25 cents for the day. May bean futures at 14.34, up 14.5. July at 14.37.75, finished 14 higher. The August at 14.29.25, up 12.5. And September soybeans, $14.02, up 9.75. November beans, 13.81.5, up 6. January at $13.80, up 5.75. Bean meal futures at 391.90, up 370. Bean oil at 56.64, 62 higher. Live cattle futures finished the June at 115.82.5, 70 cents higher for the day. August at 118.47.5, up 60. May feeders at 148.32.5, 12.5 cents higher. The August, $150.95 per 100 pounds, up 25 cents. And lean hogs finished the May futures at $94.22.5, up $1.47.5. June futures there, $93.52.5, up $1.52.5. You're listening to the Closing Market Report, comes to you from the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Nearby crude oil at $103.14 a barrel, up $1.67. Ethanol at $2.28 and 4 cents. That's 0.9 cents higher. Natural gas at $2.09 and 7 cents, down 4 and 4 cents. And heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.17 even, just about 0.9 cents higher. Gold futures at $1,628.50 an ounce, up $16.20. And the dollar at 80.08, up 0.30. The CRB index at 306.49, up 1.53 on the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service. For the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon, mostly sunny skies, a high of 59 degrees with an east-northeast wind at 16 to 18, gusting to 22. Tonight, areas of frost after 3 a.m., otherwise mostly clear. A low of 34 degrees, northeast winds between 9 and 11. And Friday, areas of frost before 8 a.m., that's tomorrow morning. Otherwise sunny and a high of 60 degrees with an east-northeast wind at 8 to 10. Friday night, clear and 37. Saturday, sunny and a high of 67 degrees Saturday night, to 30% chance of showers before 1 a.m. It will be on Saturday evening mostly cloudy with a low of 48 degrees. And on Sunday, sunny skies and a high of 65 degrees. Sunday night, partly cloudy and a low of 43. Monday, mostly sunny and 59. Monday night, cloudy and 39. Tuesday, mostly sunny and 54. Tuesday night, partly cloudy and 35. And Wednesday, sunny skies, a high near 56 degrees. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with meteorologist Peter Levitt right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. Usually we talk with Dan Zwicker at ADM Grain Group. He's out of the office this afternoon. And Mike Zuzulo would normally join us on a Friday, but of course the markets are closed tomorrow. So he has graciously decided to join us this afternoon. Thanks, Mike, for taking the time with us today.
My pleasure, Todd. A happy and blessed Easter to you and Dave and all the nice people at Will Radio and also our great listeners out there.
The same to you. So let's take a look at the marketplace. And maybe you might want to start with the weather. I got to say frost a couple of times.
Yeah.
that scared a few people, didn't it?
I got a few phone calls today from clients saying, boy, I hope those temperatures aren't really accurate. Or, do you think they're going to be accurate or not?
Did you become a weatherman for them then?
Well, I think the big thing for me is not so much Illinois and Indiana. I think the big thing for me is what NAS did to us in the Planet Acreage report. And you and I talked about this a little less than a week ago. You know, you've got 1.17 million more acres coming in corn for North Dakota, 300,000 more for South Dakota. In fact, South Dakota is looking at 5.5 million compared to Indiana, 6.1. And then you've got 600,000 more than last year for Minnesota for a total of 8.7 million. So not even including northern Nebraska or northern Iowa or Wisconsin, I think it's really important to keep in mind that as we go into Tuesday's report, the trade's probably going to have to be split up a little bit here with three major features, with weather being one, and whether this cold snap really happens this coming weekend, and then how does it look 7-8 days out later, because I'm seeing some low 20s for some of these parts of North Dakota and South Dakota. That we're looking at cold this weekend, but then another big cold snap another 7 days later. I think the trade, when I talked to some contacts today, they were looking at the identical thing coming up at the midday models. And so we've got the weather coming out, which, you know, can kind of congeals with the corn planting weather and the pace that we come out with on Monday and how much farther advanced we can be a week from Monday. And then you've got the USDA report on Tuesday. You've got the numbers for the South American crop for beans probably being the number one thing the trade will be looking at, and the number two will be the 2011 corn carryover number. So then after that, you've got the typical post-holiday, post-3-day weekend potential trend shift and fund liquidation, fund rebalancing, and chart technicals that, you know, kind of all blend into the number three. So those are kind of the big three things that... These three things will probably drive our price trend for the rest of the month. That's why I make such a big deal out of them.
Sometimes it is perception and not actuality. Have the Dakotas actually planted much corn at this point, do you think?
No, they have not. No, okay. I mean, Monday's report showed hash marks for the Dakotas from
right.
what I remember
what I
seeing on Monday. Right. And you know, this is why I think part of the reason why today's close, if you notice, December corn made a new weekly high and closed at a new weekly high of 550 and a quarter. We've been able to come over 25 cents off those lows made after the report. May beans, new 7-month high close of 1434. So I think the trade's very, very well aware of these three factors, but these three factors will be continued into the trading aspect next week, I believe.
Now, when I talked yesterday to Drew Lerner, he discussed cold weather in the weekend, but it was for the Deep South, so below the Ohio River, and Tennessee was at 15% planted for their corn. Are you concerned, and have you talked to anybody about problems potentially there?
Yeah, I've got a client near Memphis, and we talked about that. They're not real nervous about that at this point. They feel like, well, maybe we'll get clipped, but we've got warm enough ground soil, ground temperatures that they're not real nervous about being in the 35, 36 degrees. I think most of the producers I've spoken with this week, and I've been out of the office half the week, but most of the producers I've spoken with this week would be more worried about 30 degrees or below for the whole night. And most of those producers are probably more worried about what they just put in the ground versus something that would come back, be up already. You know, I think that you've already got to stand up. They may be worried about that, but I think they'd probably be a little bit more worried about getting something in and then having it sit there if we would turn cool and stay cool for the next 10 days or so. I think the producers feel like they can take a little bit of a nip on the production potential if it's already emerged, but they would not want to have any standability problems where you'd have some come up and some not come up, and then your population numbers are all thrown off.
Did that plant more corn this year than
he did?
Planned?
Yes,
yeah.
He did. Yeah,
I thought probably that was the case. I talked to John Bondurant this morning, and we'll use that for Commodity Week over the weekend. Everybody always wants to know what he did, and he had planned for 800 acres. He put it in 2,800 acres of
yes.
corn. So the planters were rolling in the south, and he said he'd already priced it out. But it looks to me like the Ohio River ought to be a really good marketplace for premiums by the time we get to, July for those early harvested acres, I would think.
I agree. I think that's where Tuesday's report with the 11 carryover comes into play. You know, there's a pretty wide distinction between the low number of 626 and the high number of 812 on some of the newswire estimates. I'm below 700 at this point.
Mm-hmm.
If you're below 700 million and you're coming into a very cold weather, I think that September corn, which has been beat up and battered pretty good, I think that September corn begins to trade a lot more like July and May as we get into the middle and end of next week. I think that's where probably the trade will refocus its attention on putting a healthy premium on that September futures.
Okay, so as you've talked about several times, USDA's WASDE numbers, the World Agricultural Supply Demand Estimates, are due out 7:30 a.m. Central Time on Tuesday morning.
Right.
You suggested, of course, one of the numbers that everyone will look at is what's coming out of South America for the size of the soybean crop. And then what kind of changes do you think they will make given the grain stocks figure that was released on the 30th? They'll have to do some adjustments at some point, I would think.
Yeah, that's where this report here is more of a taking of a stab type report, in my opinion anyway. Maybe other analysts would disagree, but I don't think so because of how wide the corn estimate is and how wide the wheat estimate is as well, because those were the two shockers for the grain stocks, if you will. So to me, it's more of a taking of a stab because you're trying to assess how USDA may shift demand to compensate for the grain stock surprises that we saw in corn and wheat. And so if they lower the corn demand and the wheat demand and compensate some of that for this grain stocks report that we just received, then your carryover is not going to look too out of the range of normality, especially given that we've rallied since the acreage report, since the grain stocks report, that we've got some premium based off those reports in the market right now.
Or in other words, some rationing.
Exactly. The rationing, I don't know if I'd call the wheat and the corn so much rationing yet. I think we're probably more in the beans and the bean oil, especially really going after the rationing. We're not slowing down. And what I mean by that, Todd, is that breaks are bought. Open interest went up sharply on Monday's rally in beans. And so when breaks are bought and open interest goes up at these high levels and overbought stochastics, that to me is where you're really pressing the metal to the floor to ration demand. I haven't seen really that type of price action in corn and wheat yet.
Okay. Anything else to add before I let you go?
I think the other thing would be we are going into, and this is beating the drum, and I got a call from a client for after the morning comments, and he goes, "You guys are always so bullish." And I said, "Are you kidding me? I've been beat up so bad on beans, being hedged beans here. You got to be kidding me." But here again, I think that we are going into this report with a very low South American supply number. Not saying USDA won't match it, but they need to match it to keep that momentum going, because when I look at the seasonality of meal and beans, we've been essentially going straight up against a five-year seasonality that usually says we should be hitting some major lows in the seasonals, not major highs. So we have been so counter-seasonally strong in the meal and in the beans, I'm worried that by the time we should make highs in June, July, or lows in June, July, we'll actually be making a major high in June, July.
Okay.
Hey, well, thanks, sir.
Hey, thank you. Bye-bye.
Have a good Easter.
Mm-hmm. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. The markets, of course, are closed tomorrow.
support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
Hey, while the markets are closed tomorrow, we'll be here for the closing market report, and we'll talk with ag economist Darrell Good from the University of Illinois. Now, alongside us this afternoon is Dave Dickey with today's Ag News.
In agricultural news, USDA Deputy Secretary of Agriculture Kathleen Merrigan says that the U.S. needs more young farmers and ranchers. Merrigan says, quote, "If we do not repopulate our working lands, I don't know where to begin to talk about the woes." The latest agricultural census figures show the fastest growing group of farmers and ranchers are those over age 65. USDA is beginning to work on its 2012 census, and Merrigan is afraid the average age will be even higher when new data is compiled. For every one farmer and rancher under the age of 25, there are five who are 75 or older, according to USDA statistics. USDA is extending the enrollment period of the Conservation Reserve Program for a week. The USDA would not release any data on new applicants for the land idling program, but spokesman Matt Herrick says that officials there are surprised because strong crop prices had been expected to dampen interest. Now farmers will have until April 13th to apply for the CRP. On September 30th, contracts that keep about 6.5 million acres of potential farmland idle will expire. The National Wildlife Federation says that the U.S. biomass industry needs to exercise caution in developing new biomass crops. The report, Growing Risk, Addressing the Invasive Potential of Bioenergy Feedstocks, offers a number of steps that should be taken to address invasive species concerns with biomass crops. The report says that economic damage associated with control of and damage by invasive species in the U.S. is at least $120 billion annually. The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization says that world food prices rose slightly in March, led by gains in vegetable oils, making a third consecutive monthly increase. The FAO's Food Price Index, which measures the monthly change in international prices of a basket of food commodities, averaged 216 points in March, up from 215 points in February. The FAO Oil Fats Index rose to 245 points in March, up 2.5%, as weak growth in world palm oil production limited global soy oil export supplies, and falling rapeseed production supported gains. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Don't forget that tomorrow, Friday, the markets will be closed. This program, the Closing Market Report, will be here with a special guest, Darrell Good, in-house. I recorded him earlier in the week. And then our Commodity Week guest will be John Bondurant. I talked with him this morning. He's at Bondurant Futures out of Memphis, Tennessee. They're both really good conversations. You can listen to them on the radio, or you can just look in Commodity Week on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. I haven't posted them there just yet, but both the programs with Darrell Good and John Bondurant will be there very soon. Now, up next, you know the latest marketing twist for herbicides is touting multiple modes of action, but as you'll hear, it may not make the product any more effective. There is a focused effort to bring new herbicide premixes to the farm market. These new mixes oftentimes contain herbicides with unique modes of action. But just putting together herbicides with a differing set of modes of actions may do very little to either manage the development of resistant weeds or control those that are already resistant. It's a good concept, but may not be effective, says University of Illinois weed scientist Aaron Hager.
So, for example, if we had a premix product that contained, you know, one mode of action that happened to be inhibition of a target site known as ALS, and our specific concern, species of concern happened to be water hemp, most of the water hemp in the state of Illinois demonstrates resistance to ALS inhibitors. So in that case, if we had a premix that had only two components to it, and one out of the two is basically ineffective due to widespread existing resistance, we have multiple modes of action in the product, but really only one effective mode of action in that particular product.
There is a difference, then, between using a premix with multiple modes of action and one with multiple effective modes of action. It means the farmer not only must know and understand how herbicides in the premix work, but that they must also know which weeds are to be treated and, just as importantly, which modes of actions those weeds resist.
When you stack two different types of resistances, or three, or perhaps even four different types of resistances, either in a particular field or, in worst case scenario, an individual plant, then really coming up with a product that does have the effective multiple modes of action becomes very, very challenging.
The challenge is to find and use a premix herbicide with multiple effective modes of action on the weed population in question. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. On the phone line from TGM in Windsor, Illinois, is Matt Bennett to take up the cash grain market with us. Good afternoon to you. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Todd?
Taking a pause in the planting and waiting until after Easter?
Yeah, for the most part. You know, a lot of guys this week were running out of soil moisture down in this area, so several guys kind of took a wait-and-see approach, and we're just as blessed as could be with this rain that we had the last day or two. I mean, we had about an inch right in this area, and it never fell hard enough to, you know, even think about hurting any land. So, I don't know. It's been a good week for most people. I think a lot of guys are going to maybe take a wait-and-see approach, and there'll be a little bit of going maybe over the weekend, but nobody on Easter Sunday, I'm sure.
Your broad view of the marketplace and what we'll look forward to next week in the USDA reports.
Well, again, you know, last week was kind of a tide-turning event with the numbers, and I think looking forward, it's going to be really interesting to see what they actually do with the carryout, because based upon their numbers for stocks, one can make some pretty easy assessments of where we would be. But, you know, going into it, I think that the mentality has changed for the most part, and guys are maybe a little more patient on their sales. And, you know, I think that if nothing else, everybody's just in a little bit better mood as to where we're going with this.
That always happens when you get back in the field and put a tractor under your tail end and start to move, doesn't it?
No doubt.
All right. What are your bids for the day?
Let's see. Cash corn would be 664 in fall, 5.25. Cash beans, 14.18 fall, 13.51.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He's with TGM in Windsor, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. Again, the markets are closed tomorrow and won't open again until Sunday evening, I believe. They may open not until Monday morning. I don't recall which one of the two, but nonetheless, we'll be back with the markets on Monday. Tomorrow afternoon, the Closing Market Report will be here. Our guest will be Daryl Good, and then Commodity Week, our guest is John Bondurant. Be sure to visit willag.org or listen to the radio stations for one of those two interviews.
WILL agricultural programs and services are made possible by the Friends of WILL and by Risk Management Commodities, Farm Credit Services, and Steel Star Metal Roofing and Siding. Thank you for your continued support.
It's National Raisin and Spice Bar Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1764, the Sugar Act passed in Britain, placing new restrictions on the import of molasses to America. In 1806, Isaac Quintard patented the apple cider mill. In 1858, W. Attlee Burpee was born. Burpee founded the world's largest mail-order seed company in 1876 when he was just 18 years old. He was staked by his mother, who gave him $1,000 to get started in his business. In 1881, Edwin Houston co-patented a centrifugal separator, which could be used in separating milk. By the way, the patent not only mentioned separating milk and cream, but clearing muddy water for papermaking. In 1923, the Firestone Tire and Rubber Company of Akron, Ohio, began the first regular production of balloon tires for commercial use. Firestone's low-pressure balloon tires revolutionized work on the farm, giving tractors a more comfortable ride while lowering fuel consumption as well as lowering the danger of high-pressure tire blowouts. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Murray Wise Associates, a nationwide agricultural advisory firm and land auction company specializing in the acquisition, management, and disposition of farmland and agribusiness investments. Land, auctions, agribusiness. More information is at murraywiseassociates.com.
It's a Thursday afternoon. This is the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason on the phone line, meteorologist Pete Levitt, to take a look at the weather forecast. Good afternoon to you, Pete.
Good afternoon, Ted.
Well, tell me about this weekend forecast. There are pretty frosty temperatures that are showing up. What do you see?
Yes, well, the honeymoon's over for the heat that we've had over the last several weeks, and now we're back to normal or maybe even slightly below. And even though it's normal, it's going to seem unusually cool because it's been so warm. The first shot of this tonight, we'll get some frost and freezing temperatures down probably as far south as the I-74 corridor, with temperatures getting into the low 30s to maybe upper 20s as you get up in toward the southern end of the Great Lakes. And then a little bit colder temperatures across central portions of Wisconsin and Michigan, temperatures maybe getting down into the mid-20s up in there. So we do have some frost and freeze warning forecasts out. Nothing spectacular, but it's a first shot across the bow of a change in the pattern, which is going towards much cooler temperatures, starting out with near normal temperatures through most of the balance of this coming week. But another cold shot coming, well, late Tuesday, Wednesday, we have some more, might even be a little colder than this. So we might be talking a genuine frost or freeze as far south as maybe I-70 on that shot earlier this week. We're not looking for anything spectacular in the low 20s or the teens, but we are looking for frost and freezing conditions.
Just enough to do a little nippy damage, I suppose, if you've got a crop that's up and running early, but not too terribly bad. What are the daytime temperatures look like?
Daytime temperatures probably ranging from the upper 50s to maybe mid-60s if we just analyze the whole coming week. Around 60 tomorrow, mid-60s on a Saturday. Saturday into Sunday, probably the warmest weather on Sunday, upper 60s, back to the mid-60s, and then down into the 50s as we move into Monday and Tuesday. And a day like, say, midweek Tuesday or Wednesday, Wednesday is the day I would focus on, probably minimum temperatures very close to freezing in the northern half of Illinois and most of the parallel regions in Indiana and further north than that, and high temperatures only in the mid-50s.
Any rainfall across the Midwest over the two-week period?
Not so you'd notice. There'll be a few maybe light sprinkles or showers with the cold, unstable air coming in tomorrow night. The cold air will react with an attempt of some milder temperatures to get back in by Sunday, but that will be thwarted and we'll have some generally dry weather through the balance of the week.
Thanks so much, Pete.
My pleasure.
Pete Labatt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. Thanks for being with us. Remember, the markets are closed tomorrow, but we'll be here along with ag economist Darrell Good and then John Bondurant on Saturday.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.